I think it's time for this toxic, binary, zero-sum madness to stop.
We're not an imperial power. We're a revolutionary power.
We are no longer in a world where you can plot out moves statesman to statesman like a chessboard.
You don't know anything about my background or where I came from. It doesn't matter to you because fundamentally I'm a mean white man.
We can't do this to the next generation because America will cease to exist.
Welcome to the Monk Debate Podcast. I'm your moderator, Rudyard Griffiths. Our mission every episode is to provide you with a civil and substantive debate on the big issues of the day, free of spin, focused on the facts, and animated by smart conversation. By the end of each debate, our hope is that you'll be armed with enough information to make up your own mind about any given issue. On this episode, we debate the motion, be it resolved, liberal democracy as we know it will not survive the 21st century.
The one thing you can say about liberal democracy is that it has a succession plan. It's called a free election. The rascals get thrown out, new rascals get elected, and on we go.
I love liberal democracy. I am devoted to its ideals. But liberal democracy has been underperforming to the extent that you could be forgiven for thinking liberal democracy is just a scam to enrich the 1%.
This wasn't supposed to happen. After the fall of the Soviet Union, liberal democracy seemed to be sweeping the world. From Eastern Europe to Latin America to Africa to parts of the Middle East, liberal democratic values and institutions were on the march, ending decades of authoritarian rule. Flash forward to today, and the opposite seems to be the case. The world is witnessing the rise of a new generation of strongmen, built on fusing nationalist rhetoric with authoritarian practices. These autocrats are increasingly popular, powerful, and are openly working together to undermine the liberal democratic norms and institutions that we know globally. On this installment of the Monk Debates podcast, we challenge the essence of these arguments by debating the resolution, be it resolved, liberal democracy as we know it will not survive the 21st century. Arguing for the motion is celebrated author, broadcaster, and senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, Neil Ferguson. Arguing against the motion is Michael Ignatieff. He, too, is an acclaimed author, scholar, and is currently the president of the Central European University. Neil, Michael, welcome back to the Monk Debates in our new podcast iteration. We'll start our opening arguments with you, Neil. Please, go ahead.
You shouldn't assume there's a trend that is the friend of liberal democracy. If you go back to 1997, about 45% of countries that Freedom House looks at were rated free, about 30% were partly free, and about 25% were not free. And actually, those proportions haven't really changed much in the last 20 or so years. And there are a bunch of countries that have clearly seen a decline in freedom in the last 10 years. Venezuela, Turkey, Hungary, which Michael knows well, Russia. And one might argue that the United States is in severe danger of losing at least the liberal part of its democracy, because Donald Trump is one of those populist demagogues who've sprung up all over the democratic world in the last few years, who certainly avow their commitment to people power, but are deeply illiberal in almost every way.
A globalist is a person that wants the globe to do well, frankly, not caring about our country so much. And you know what? We can't have that. You know, they have a word. It sort of became old-fashioned. It's called a nationalist. And I say, really, we're not supposed to use that word. You know what I am? I'm a nationalist, okay?
They're illiberal on trade, they're illiberal on migration, they're illiberal even when it comes to the rule of law. The second point I'd make is that liberal democracy is struggling economically. It is not performing. It's not only encumbered with mind-boggling amounts of debt, roughly speaking, the total public and private liabilities in the United States are approaching 1,000% of gross domestic product. It's also generated a severe financial crisis, 2008-2009, and it's afflicted with profound problems of inequality. Third point I'd make is that the internet has turned out to be deeply inimical to liberalism, not to democracy. It fires people up, gets them to vote. It's not that turnout goes down. It's just that the more that the network platforms dominate the media, the worse it seems to go for liberalism, because network platforms incentivize extreme views and fake news and hollow out the center ground of politics. And that brings me to my fourth point. If there's one thing that really makes me fear for liberal democracy, it's the inexorable rise of China. Chinese investment now is vastly higher than US investment. And the great illusion of our time has turned out to be that integrating China into a liberal trading system through the World Trade Organization would lead to political liberalization there. And the opposite has happened. If anything, politically, the clock is being turned back by Xi Jinping in the direction of some kind of souped-up version of Maoism. For all these reasons, I think, unfortunately, and I regret it very much, that liberal democracy as we know it won't survive the 21st century.
Neil Ferguson, thank you for those opening remarks. Michael Ignatieff, let's have your opening summary of this debate.
Well, Neil Ferguson, as always, has made a lot of thoughtful and interesting points, but to my surprise, he's much gloomier than I think the evidence warrants. Liberal institutions, I would argue, are resilient and are likely to survive the 21st century because they are built for the characteristic problem of modern societies, which is conflict. We disagree. There are clashes of interest, classes of region, classes of race, and liberal democracy's intricate balance of majority rule counterbalanced by minority rights, judicial review, rule of law, free media, are perfectly built over many centuries to deal with our fundamental political problem, which is we disagree about what we should be doing. Let's take two societies that are liberal democracies, the United Kingdom and the United States, and just look what's happening. I think Brexit is not a sign of liberal democracy in crisis. I think it's a sign of liberal democracy dealing with a fundamental disagreement in a country and doing so peacefully. Let me take a second example, which is the United States. Everybody's kind of afraid of Trump. That's the conventional narrative. But you look more closely and you see liberal institutions functioning impeccably and in ways that we didn't even know they could function. For example, the president makes a phone call to a foreign leader, the Ukrainian president. On the call, who knew? Are a bunch of CIA guys who listening in, and they hear the president saying something that they think is improper.
The actions taken to date by the president have seriously violated the Constitution. The president must be held accountable. No one is above the law.
There are channels for them to protest what the president is saying. They are protected by whistleblower legislation. That is liberal democracy functioning as it should. A couple of other points. Neil rightly raises the ascendancy of China. He mentions the consolidation of authoritarian rule in the country I'm speaking to you from, Hungary. We could also draw in Putin's Russia. Look, no question, these three authoritarian regimes, and we could mention some others, Erdogan's Turkey, are in the ascendant, and it looks as if liberal democracy is on the back foot. But notice one critical weakness of all four regimes I've mentioned. They have no succession plan. What comes after Xi Jinping? No one knows. What comes after Putin? No one knows. What comes after Orban? No one knows. What comes after Erdogan? No one knows. The one thing you can say about liberal democracy is that it has a succession plan. It's called a free election. It's called the circulation of elites. The rascals get thrown out, new rascals get elected, and on we go. For these reasons, I think that liberal democracy will prove much more resilient in the 20th century than Neil is saying, because it's built for conflict and it's built to solve the succession problem.
Well, Michael Ignatieff, thank you for that opening statement. And look, I think we have a fascinating debate here to dive into. So, Neil, let's have you come back on Michael's two key points that he's just made. This idea that liberal democracy is designed for conflict and it has deep institutional structures that can rein in abuses of power effectively in the way that other regimes can't. And then this issue of succession, that there is a succession mechanism, whereas Putin's Russia, other autocratic states, which may be in the ascendancy now, could face dire consequences in the event of a succession crisis.
Well, the strong implication of what Michael is arguing is that it will all turn out for the best in the United Kingdom, in the United States, but I think it's much too early to draw that optimistic conclusion. In many ways, the problem that Brexit has revealed is precisely the ambiguities of a constitution that is not written down and which was subjected to a number of what proved to be quite dangerous innovations in recent years. The very creation of a Supreme Court, I would argue, has elevated dangerously the power of the judiciary in the political system. And at the same time, a modification to the rules of parliamentary procedure mean that the Prime Minister no longer has the power to dissolve Parliament, which used to be central to the British system. As a result, Britain's actually in the grip of a constitutional crisis, the outcome of which is hard to foresee. Since Boris Johnson became the Conservative leader, the Conservatives have surged in the polls precisely because he has made populist arguments against not only the majority in the House of Commons, but against the Supreme Court, as well as against the European Union.
And that is why it is now so urgent for us to build a new relationship with our friends in the EU on the basis of a new deal, a deal that can heal the rift in British politics, unite.
So I think on the UK, one can't conclude that liberal democracy is going to win. If anything, I think it's quite plausible that liberal democracy will suffer a great defeat. As for the US, who knows where the Trump saga will end? But I'm very skeptical that it's going to end with a triumphant assertion of the powers in the Constitution to impeach the president. As for succession planning in authoritarian states, I'd love to believe that when Putin gives up the ghost and Erdogan does the same and Orban follows them into the grave, there will be a transition back to liberal democracy in these countries. But of course, that's highly unlikely. What usually happens when authoritarian leaders kick the bucket is that you descend into civil war or some other authoritarian comes along and says they'll carry on the previous regime. So I can't share Michael's optimistic, even Panglossian view. I wish I could. I want to make it clear that it gives me no pleasure to pronounce the death of liberal democracy as we know it. But I think it was moribund for some time.
Neil Ferguson, thank you for that analysis. Well, Michael Ignatieff, fighting words, Panglossian. Let's have you respond to what you've just heard Neil Ferguson say.
Well, talking to Neil is always a terrific proof against facile, i.e. Panglossian optimism. I share his sense that the future of both the United Kingdom as a liberal democracy and the United States are finally poised. I just make one point. These institutions were not invented yesterday. Their historical prestige, their dead weight in the water, is an important fact in making us believe that they've got a good chance of enduring. And another point that I think we need to put a lot of emphasis on is that liberal democracy will survive to the degree that citizens want to be protected from arbitrary power. And I think that's a pretty good bet. What strikes me both in the United States and in the United Kingdom is the sheer vigor and passion with which people grasp the issues that are at stake. Canada is an extraordinarily enduring and successful liberal democratic experiment that has survived near-death experiences. For example, the referendum in 1995. Deep, passionate, savage debate between regions over the future of the country, over our participation in two world wars. We forget at our peril just how many crises of legitimacy, crises of confidence, these systems have managed to overcome in the 20th century. And I do feel in the 21st century, they will overcome them too. And one final remark, I don't think that the succession problems that China, Russia, Turkey, Hungary face are going to be resolved with a happy return to liberal democracy. I was making precisely the reverse point, which is that these regimes risk plunging their countries into civil conflict and civil war if they can't solve their succession problems. Whereas liberal democracies, whatever our impatience with them, do have a consistent succession regime which has one vital result. We avoid civil war. We avoid civil conflict. We avoid bloodshed in the streets. And I cannot avoid that, the possibility of that scenario in the four authoritarian countries that I'm mentioning.
You're listening to the Monk Debates podcast. Be it resolved, liberal democracy as we know it will not survive the 21st century. Arguing for the motion is author, broadcaster, and senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, Neil Ferguson. Arguing against the motion is Michael Ignatieff, writer, scholar, and the current president of the Central European University. I'm your moderator, Rudyard Griffiths. If you're enjoying this debate, check out our website, monkdebates.com, for dozens of debates on the big issues of the day. Listen to Tony Blair and Christopher Hitchens debate whether religion is a force for good in the world. Watch Fareed Zakaria and Neil Ferguson go head-to-head on the future of geopolitics. Read Stephen Fry and Jordan Peterson's debate on political correctness. All these debates free to listen, watch, and read at monkdebates.com. Now, back to our episode. Neil Ferguson, I want to build on the word that Michael has invoked a couple of times now, freedom. It's something you've written and thought a lot about in your various books. And it kind of begs the question that, you know, no one is immigrating to China, Russia, or Hungary. It seems that the global pool of talent is attracted to the openness, the freedom of liberal democratic societies.
Well, Rudyard, the point is well made that people from the rest of the world would love to move either to North America or Western Europe. Now, is this good news for liberal democracy, as you seem to imply? Well, it certainly shows how attractive liberal democracies are, but they're mainly attractive to people because they're rich, not because they're liberal or even democratic. It's the economics that are really pulling people northwards. And unfortunately, this is precisely one of the reasons why liberal democracy is in trouble, because large-scale migration is not popular. Europeans like to be critical of Donald Trump, but in fact, if you look at surveys of European opinion, European electorates are well to the right of Americans on the issue of immigration, and most of what Trump says about immigration would be quite popular with European voters who are still reeling from the enormous upsurge of migration in 2015-16, when more than a million people poured into Europe, not just from Syria, but from all over North Africa, from the Middle East, from South Asia.
The difference between what is going on now and any other either migratory wave or refugee wave in the history of mankind that I can see is that never before have we had a fifth column living within our communities that hates us, wants to kill us, and wants to overturn our complete way of life. I believe.
That was a major shock, and it's one of the reasons why illiberal populism surged in Europe. I think when Michael talks about the historic foundations of democracy in the Anglosphere, in Britain, in the United States, in Canada. He makes an important point, but I think he understates the extent to which new technologies are really rapidly eroding that historic foundation. We can't underestimate the dramatic change in the structure of the public sphere that the internet has brought about. Many educated people carry on as if nothing much has changed. I notice that political scientists continue to use the same equations, look at the same data, opinion polls, and so forth, missing completely the extent to which now voters consume news via network platforms like Facebook and Google, and the ways in which those network platforms polarize electorates and incentivize the circulation of extreme views and fake news. These simply cannot be underestimated. I think they pose a major challenge, even to those democracies that have deep historical roots, because, and here I think one can make a classical argument, there is an underlying tension between liberalism and democracy.
Well, Neil Ferguson, two terrific points for Michael Ignatieff to pick up on, Michael. And so let's have your reflections on both of those: technology's impact on liberal democracy and migration, which for you, Michael, is in some ways a personal story, too. Your experiences with the Central European University, the authoritarian inclinations of Viktor Orban's regime in Hungary, the extent to which you were forced to relocate to Vienna, in no small part, I guess, because Orban's theory of the case, his version of political populism, was buoyed by the European migration crisis.
I think Hungary is an interesting example of a country where an authoritarian leader has secured majority support to basically keep his society from becoming multi-ethnic and multicultural.
And I hope now we will make a move to the direction of reconstruction of European democracy, and finally we will do what the people really request. And I think the people request two things. First is no migrants more in, so stop them. And the second is those who are in should bring back.
And this is a pattern you see in lots of places. But that's not the only route into the 21st century. I was born and raised in Toronto, Canada, where someone like me, a white male, was the dominant majority. And now I can look forward in the 2030s and 2040s to a Toronto in which I will be the minority. Neil is quite right. This is producing a lot of fear and anxiety. But I would argue, on the contrary to what he's been maintaining, that liberal democracy is built for pluralism. It's built for diversity. There are no more passionate defenders of minority rights than the minorities who now compose multicultural and multi-ethnic societies. So my argument would be to flip what Neil Ferguson is saying. I think that the 21st century will produce huge migration pressures in all societies. They need political systems that can adjudicate conflicts between majorities and minorities, and liberal institutions are actually built for precisely that role. To the technology point, Neil makes some extremely important points. I was in politics for a while, and for 5 years, my wife said, there's one thing you don't want to do, which is read your social media feed, right? So, you know, it was a sewer. So I'm deeply aware of the pressures because it's causing what I think could fairly be called a crisis of representation in liberal democracy. I think that what we're learning painfully is that representation is more important than ever. To descant, to deliberate, to reflect, to work on the basis of evidence, instead of the new technologies destroying representation, I think it should be empowering the representative function in democracy. And I don't want to sound complacent, because I think that liberal democracy is not addressing that challenge. It's not empowering representatives to do the job that we elect them to do. So my defense of liberal democracy is not complacent, But imagine how easy it would be if it was just built into every bit of important parliamentary business, that the public be formally consulted by institutions of government using the latest technologies, so that we bring all the benefits of the new technologies into a representative system and at the same time gain the benefits of representation, which is people sit back and think and learn and try to develop evidence-based public policy on the basis of all this stuff.
Thank you, Michael Ignatieff. Neil Ferguson, I want to pick up on one of the points that you made off the top to build your case for why liberal democracy would not survive the 21st century. Specifically, your argument that college campuses, students themselves, are becoming a source of illiberalism in our society. So I want to have both of you spend a little time just zeroing in on what's happening on college campuses and why you, Neil, think that this is something that should be raised to a level of concern in terms of the existential threats that liberal democracy face. Some people would think that's a bit of a stretch.
Jonathan Haidt, who created Heterodox Academy to defend academic freedom and intellectual diversity on campuses.
It may not always be comfortable, but when ideas collide, we learn, we grow together. Heterodox Academy is rebuilding the culture of free inquiry and open civil debate that turns universities into engines of discovery, growth, and progress.
Heterodox Academy recently published some pretty chilling survey results looking at the attitudes of students currently in four-year college programs in the United States. 43% said that people who don't respect others don't deserve the right of free speech. 58% said that colleges have an obligation to protect students from offensive speech and ideas that could create a difficult learning environment. And 60% insisted that our society can prohibit hate speech and still protect free speech. So it's pretty clear that there is a very poor understanding amongst students today of the fundamental principle of free speech, which is that we must defend the right of people to say things that we disagree with, that we find offensive. That's what free speech means. And I think if you just spend time on campuses, as I do, you can't fail to notice that there has been a real change in attitudes. And it's happened relatively swiftly. I think back to Oxford in the 1980s. We could say whatever we liked with impunity, and we took advantage of that to say some really very stupid things, if I look back on it. But we certainly didn't fear that we would face dire consequences for expressing our juvenile senses of humor. How can it be healthy for liberal democracy if the institutions that educate the supposed elite, or at least the academically stronger part of the population, are failing to teach them that free speech is fundamental to liberal democracy?
Neil Ferguson, thank you for that. Well, Michael Ignatieff, you are the rector, the head of the European Central University, so I expect you have a strong view on what Neil's just said.
Well, look, if you're in a kind of authoritarian context like I am, it becomes especially important to defend the university as a place for free speech. And I have to report that there have been times when my students have walked out of an auditorium when a conservative speaker got up to speak because they objected to his views on gay rights and gay marriage. And I thought that was regrettable and said so. And so that part of what Neil Ferguson is saying strikes a chord with me. We simply have to provide a platform for a whole range of views. We are not doing so. Liberal institutions must stand up. And I think it does play into political life. Societies that are faced with the kinds of problems we've got, problems of racial division, problems of social division, these societies cannot solve these problems unless we can speak about them honestly. I'm more optimistic than Neil is because I just think that the kind of rarefied, holier-than-thou, sanctimonious, suffocating political correctness that I knew at Harvard and he knew at Harvard because we were both coincided in that great institution, that, thank God, is not what it's like in a meeting of the Chicago City Council or the Toronto City Council or the House of Commons. There it's, you know, it's wham, bang, rough and tumble, angry debate. And that's what a liberal democracy thrives on, is really passionate disagreement and argument. And the virtue of liberal democracy is that it somehow manages to reconcile that extremely conflictual exchange of opinion with decisions that people eventually line up to and support somewhat regretfully.
I don't just think it, I know it, because, Michael, what is most striking is the speed with which these illiberal ideas that are hostile to free speech, that demonize so-called hate speech, that insist on trigger warnings and safe spaces, these ideas are very rapidly spreading outwards from universities like Harvard and Stanford.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm honored to introduce Mr. Ben Shapiro.
No thanks to the leftists who sought to have this lecture canceled, out of apparent fear of my wretched evil, who wrote that BU should ban me in order to protect its students. From me. Look at me. Saying things.
It's, to me, rather terrifying to see how fast woke culture is now entering the political bloodstream with each new intake of young legislators, all ready, of course, to proclaim the benefits of socialism, which now is actually more popular than capitalism with Generation Z Americans in their early 20s. I'm so glad that Michael brought up history in what he just said, because one sure sign that we have a problem is how badly history is now being taught in universities. One reason that young people have naive ideas about socialism is that they're almost completely ignorant of 20th century history, of what happened when real existing socialism was in fact operating in countries such as Hungary. They have a very poor understanding of the realities of life in the Soviet Union, or for that matter, Mao Zedong's China. And again, I think this is a reason to be extremely worried, because clearly, if we don't teach people the history of democracy, liberalism, and their enemies, they're hardly likely to avoid the pitfalls that seem to exist for all liberal democracies.
Before I go to closing statements, Michael, do you want to rebut anything that Neil Ferguson's just said?
My sense of this is that we're talking at the margins of the problem. In other words, yes, the new social media is a bit scary. Yes, the ignorance of the young is an eternal problem that every generation laments. But the real test for liberal democracy is that whether it can deal with the very practical challenges that are in front of it. And we forget at our peril that liberal democracies since 1945 have faced one successive challenge after another and have overcome them. My sense is that I want to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So, Neil Ferguson, I'm going to ask you for a summing up. Give us a sense of what you've heard from Michael. And is there something that Michael said over the course of this conversation that would cause you to at least not change your mind, but maybe rethink one or two of your core arguments?
I love liberal democracy. I am devoted to its ideals. But when I reflect on its prospects in the 21st century, I can't help but feel pessimistic. Not only have the illiberals and the wholly undemocratic regimes been making gains worldwide, but liberal democracy has been underperforming in terms of economic results in terms of equality, which it has manifestly failed to deliver, to the extent that you could be forgiven for thinking liberal democracy is just a scam to enrich the 1%. I think Michael's appeal to the historic roots of the liberal democratic tradition in the English-speaking world is moving. And I think he's right to expect liberal democracy to be most resilient in those places where it has been longest established. But even there, I fear that there is a major threat. And I thought it might be appropriate just to conclude with a quotation from one of the great founders of American democracy, Alexander Hamilton. This is from the Federalist Papers, and I'll make this my punchline. A dangerous ambition more often lurks behind the specious mask of zeal for the rights of the people than under the forbidding appearance of zeal for the firmness and efficiency of government. History will teach us that the former has been found a much more certain road to the introduction of despotism than the latter, and that of those men who have overturned the liberties of republics, the greatest number have begun their career by paying an obsequious court to the people, commencing demagogues and ending tyrants. It's happening in our time, even in the English-speaking countries, even in the United States of America that Hamilton helped to found. And that is why I am fundamentally pessimistic about the future of liberal democracy.
Thank you, Neil Ferguson. Well, Michael Ignatieff, you're going to have the last word. Your closing statement, please.
Oh, it was wonderful to hear Alexander Hamilton. And I think that that is why liberal democracy has proven so resilient. Hamilton and the American founders, building on the British experience, building on French examples, building on European experience, built a liberal institutional system that would check the dangers of this demagogic zeal for the people that Hamilton feared and that Neil Ferguson fears now in the 21st century in the person of Trump and other shallow demagogues. I mean, my point being that liberal democracy was built to contain the forces and dangers that Neil feels will overthrow it. That's my fundamental point about liberal democracy. It's built to adjudicate the conflicts and keep them peaceful. And that's one of the reasons why it's resilient and adaptive. My second point is that it depends for its continuance on its appeal to ordinary citizens as the best system to protect their freedom and their liberty. And this is an enormous source of strength and renewal for a liberal democratic system. And I come back to a fundamental point. Liberal democracy is also a machine, a system, a set of values for the avoidance of violence. I think everybody fears political systems breaking down into violence. And I am very struck by the resilience of liberal democratic systems through some really dramatically difficult times in the last 25 years. In the heartland of liberal democracy, we've avoided violence, conflict that would destroy a society. And on that basis, I conclude that this system, sometimes ramshackle, sometimes critical, always in some form of crisis, will see out the 21st century, and that naysayers like Neil, I hope, I pray, will be proven wrong.
Well, Michael Ignatieff, Neil Ferguson, thank you for this conversation. It's been in-depth. We've touched on history, current events, and we've reflected on the future of liberal democracy in the 21st century. Thank you both for your generous time today.
Our pleasure.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Monk Debates podcast, a place for civil and substantive debate on the big issues of the day. To listen to more debates on everything from climate change to religion to geopolitics to the future of human progress, visit our website, monkdebates.com. You can also find show notes on today's debate along with a full transcript. Thank you for helping us bring back the art of public debate, one conversation at a time. I'm Rudyard Griffiths.
The Monk Debates are produced by Antica Productions and supported by the Monk Foundation. Rudyard Griffiths, Laura Regeer, and Ricky Gerwitz are the producers. The executive producer of Antica is Stuart Cox. Be sure to download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like us, feel free to give us a 5-star rating. Thanks again for listening.